Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economic show entitled Money Matters. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show. And welcome to the 264th edition of the economic show entitled Money Matters. Today's show is entitled The Melt Up. Before we begin, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge Station staff members or directors. Well, my name's Mark. Thanks for joining me today for another economic show. How is everybody today? Well, the Dow. So let's talk about the Dow. The most commonly watched indexes are S&P 500, the Dow 30, the NASDAQ, and the Russell 2000. So the big numbers as covered in every show. We sit in the Dow, 26,193, as I read it on the screen. 12:10 Pacific Standard Time, Thursday, February 1st, 2018. You may be listening to the show at another time, in which case market indices may not be accurate at the time you listen to the show. The show is carried on dozens of other radio stations, and they air them at a different time. You can only see it live right here, but it is picked up all sorts of places. So thanks for joining me. 26,193. So Dow is headed toward 27,000, and these large numbers, 26,000 below us, 27,000 above us, would be major support and resistance levels, according to technicians. 26,000 below us would be a support level, and we did not violate that in the last week or so, I don't think. And 27,000 above us is a resistance level. So, as you know, we did have a rather brutal sell-off a couple days ago. 300-something points. I don't remember whether it breached 26,000. I don't think it did, but could have. So we'll see if we can hold. It looks like it's stalled out in the last couple of days, bouncing around here. Watch stock today will be Apple. It posts after the close. We'll see if all the rumors are true. We'll see what happens there. Facebook posted it. Popped up $7 or $8 this morning. Facebook is up 6.87, 193.76. And jobless claims unexpectedly fell, so says Yahoo Finance today. And so we'll see. Watch the Trump presidential State of the Union address. That was interesting. And they always point out the heroes and people that do good things in the crowd. That's kind of a new thing, I think. I think it's been going on 20 years or so, but now everybody does it. They pick out people and highlight people that are heroes and families that have gone through tragedies and use that to forward their political agenda. But this Dow has gone 17,000 and some change, 26,000 and some change under the Trump administration. However, the Dow has gone up from 6,500 to 26,000 and since 2009, right? So how much is due to his policies or not? He touted that a lot of the stuff that we see in the market, unemployment for African Americans is historically low, and for Spanish American, what do we say? Mexican Americans, I guess you'd say, at an all-time low. I didn't verify those claims, but that's what he said. And presidents have been known to misstate things on the State of the Union address. But you can't argue. Stock market likes this guy for sure. I mean, it has definitely increased the most in a year than it has, I think, up 30% or more. It's gone crazy. We'll keep an eye on all this, see if it goes down below 26,000 or see if it's just going to look back and say no, and take off 27,000, 28, 29, 30, who knows? Nobody knows which way the markets will go, of course, and I do not know as well. I have a tendency to be early on my prognostications. I'm always early, you know. I predict something early, a year early, 2 years early, or 6 months early. I don't know why that is. I guess I see things before the market sees things. And don't forget, the markets is a study of sociology, because the markets do not reflect reality in the economy. They only reflect the perceptions of all the players in it at any particular time. It is, in my opinion, that the market will reflect reality eventually. And I always use the example of housing. When housing started to reverse in price, housing stocks continued to run. So the perception, even though the market was turning, the perception by investors was that housing was okay. So the housing stocks ran, even though the housing market was starting to turn. And the housing stocks eventually reflected that reality later. So I always look at it like the market is almost looking back. They say the market looks ahead 6 months. I kind of think that it looks back 6 months. But that's just my opinion. So, yeah, we'll see where it all goes today. You know, the melt up. You know, it's interesting. The term melt up has, you know, hit the media of analysts and people that watch the market. And the theory about the melt up is that, here's the theory, okay? The theory is that when governments go on printing sprees, and I think everybody out there will agree that this government's gone on a printing spree since Trump, since Obama, since Bush. I mean, you know, we took, I think in the mid-90s, we hit a $1 trillion deficit. It took 200 plus years to hit $1 trillion deficit. And now where do we sit? $17 trillion? So in the last, 20 years, we've increased the deficit 17 times over where it was, or 20, yeah, about 20 years. That's pretty amazing, but it's not really amazing when you look at the exponential increase of your credit card. When you keep charging on your credit card, of course, the balances go up exponentially as the interest compiles on top of that. And so the theory of the melt-up says anytime you increase the deficit, remember when they print a dollar bill, that's part of the deficit. It's printed money. And they really don't print it anymore. They create money with a keystroke at the Federal Reserve. And when we see that, the melt-up theorists believe that all that money flowing out of the Federal Reserve created $7 trillion in the last year or so, $5 trillion, $10 trillion, whatever they've created, will find its way into stocks. Especially with a low interest rate environment that we are sitting in, because people won't put their money in the bank. A lot of people won't put their money in the bank because you don't get hardly any interest. And so they move to the stock market, where they will get either dividends, which are payments by companies quarterly, semi-annually, or annually, or even monthly sometimes. And so they go into the stock market looking for better returns in the bank account. And so when all this money plows into the market will believe that anytime we see a hiccup in the market or a hiccup in the economy, the feds will come forward again and print more money. So eventually all that money starts into the stock market. And instead of a crash, which you see when stocks go down rapidly over a prolonged period of time, the melt up is when we see the reverse of a crash where the market skyrockets over a long period of time in the upward direction. And so that is the theory of the melt up. And so that's the term melt up. In recent months, obviously, undoubtedly due to the seemingly relentless rise in stocks, the term melt-up has appeared in many a financial commentary, and today it's appearing in mine. Indeed, the term appeared years ago by some prognosticators who predicted, and who I believe, in my opinion as well, trillions of dollars created by global central bankers to facilitate the myriad of bailouts required, that's arguably required. Some of us believe that the bailouts were not required, but many believe they were. These bailouts were initiated to stabilize the world markets after the 08-09 crisis, right? Remember that crisis? The world was coming to an end. Global bank implosion. Indeed, the economic financial world around the globe was imploding. And so with all this money they created, the melt-up theorists say that that money will find its way into the stock market, and it'll drive prices to previously unheard of levels. And that's kind of what we're seeing, right? With the Dow Jones, which is a widely followed index representing 30 stocks. Some say it is not representative of the overall market. Some argue that it is. Soaring from the mid-6,000s, where it stood at the nadir, the lowest part of the crash. And it has gone up, over 26,000, where it stands this week. An argument could be made that this close to quadrupling of the Dow could be a result of the debt skyrocketing, right? We print all this money, it finds its way into the Dow. So this quadrupling of the Dow, the melt-up theorists believe that this is the proverbial melt-up. That's what's causing it, the melt-up. From investorwords.com, the melt-up is defined as, quote, a dramatic upturn of certain stocks occurring when investors unexpectedly purchase stocks and drive their price up without specific reason, logic, or improvement in economic conditions. A melt-up reflects a mass mentality where it appears that investors do not want to miss out on making a possible profit. Sounds like cryptocurrency, huh? My comment there. This is usually followed by a meltdown. So is the opinion of InvestorWords.com. So I will add, obviously, the melt-up portion of the equation is quite an enjoyable ride experienced by most investors as they see their portfolio's value rising almost daily. Reminds you of the housing market, doesn't it? What could be simpler and more enjoyable? Free money. Such increases in stock valuations and their subsequent effect on investor perception of their new net worth, right? When stocks go up, you perceive you have more money. Could also lead to the often touted wealth effect. Wealth effect. The wealth effect is based on the belief that with rising stock portfolios come rising optimism on behalf of investors, and they will subsequently spend more money, which in turn will boost asset prices, stocks, and it make them rise even farther as companies reap the rewards of such spending. And so around and around we go, right? Upwards, onwards to the carefree life of free money resembling the Roaring Twenties, a period in U.S. history that is said to be one of the most lavish spending periods brought on by the relentless rise in their markets between 1920 and 1929. During that time, the nation's wealth reportedly more than doubled, only to fall victim to the great stock market crash of 1929. Of course, we'll remember that. We don't remember it. We remember reading about it and seeing the soup lines. Of course, the wealth effect is thought to kick in reverse when the opposite happens, mainly when the stock market melts down, people rein in spending. And they reined in their spending in 1929. And that's when we saw the soup lines. Nobody was spending any money. If you had cash, you were king. And this reining in of spending has happened at various other times in history, not the least of which being our own crisis in 08 and 09, right? When the government ran ads that said, go to Disneyland, buy an SUV. 2009, consumer spending fell off the proverbial cliff, to put it mildly. So you have to wonder about a government that comes out and says, look, we're going into economic crisis, go out and borrow some money and spend it and go to Disneyland and buy a car. Normally, if my household spending is cut back because of economic woes, the last thing I do is go out and spend more, right? Now, this is not to say, as InvestorWords.com puts it, that this is, quote, usually followed by a meltdown. So the question would be, well, is this cause for concern? Well, if you were to believe InvestorWords.com, quote, this is usually followed by a meltdown, well, if it's a meltdown and you believe that that's coming, well, that would be concerned, right? After all, this is the opinion of InvestorWords.com. It is the opinion of other analysts as well, but the other analysts that also say no way. So the caveat is no one, no matter who it is, can predict market direction, no way, no how. Obviously, markets rise and fall as a matter of fact. They do. Just look at a chart of any stock market. It bounces around like a ball. But who's to say that this market can't quadruple again before correcting? If it ever corrects, I mean, just because it's always corrected before doesn't mean it will. right? I think most people would agree that it will correct to some point, to some degree, at some point, right? But not necessarily. Most analysts and investors alike would concur a market fall is in the cards, like the proverbial approaching train. But when it falls, and by how much, is an unknown fact to all. Should a minor correction or multiple corrections happen along the way, such corrections are viewed by some as healthy and normal patterns of markets in general. After all, they always do that. The trick is by how much and when do you pull the trigger and get out, right? If you have to look at the market correction in the dot-com bubble or the market correction in the housing boom, when do you get out? Or the crypto boom, right? The fact remains that although manias are something that we see like in dot-com or in the housing boom or in cryptos recently, those are like, gotta buy it because it's going up in value and it's just everybody buys and buys and buys. And then these are called boom and bust cycles. Or the boom cycles, as Federal Chief Alan Greenspan, when he was in office as our Federal Reserve Chief, so adequately coined the phrase irrational exuberance. He coined that in response to the dot-com stock run-up. And indeed, these run-ups may appear excessive to some. Is the Dow running from 17,000 and change to 26,000 in a year, is that excessive? Well, some people would say yes, some people would say no. Markets don't follow scripts, nor do they give a hoot about what anybody thinks. I have always said, and like I said when I started the show, markets will reflect reality eventually, but their day-to-day movements are only the perception of all the millions of investors in it on any given day. Does the market deserve to be flat today? Does it deserve to fall by 10,000 points? Does it deserve to rise by 5,000 points? It's only the perception of investors. It has nothing to do with reality, in my opinion. The market will reflect reality eventually. But that's why the smart money or the early money knows which way the market is going to go, or they think they know. That said, the term melt-up is only a term made up by some to describe what they perceive as an irrational movement over a given specific time period. Is this melt up from 17,005 to 26,000 and change irrational for 12 months? Is the move from 6,500 from 09 to 26,000 and change in the last 8 years, is that irrational? Is that an irrational movement? As in all debates, there are others on the other opposite side of the analytic spectrum. Some may say that these drastic movements in the markets are irrational, and some will say this is only the sign of a healthy and booming economy. I will say that, as we detailed in the last show, commodities, all the things that stuff are made out of, had a horrendous correction in 08. And they really, except for the last 6 months, commodities have just fallen and fallen and fallen. So I put forth, and nobody, I've never seen anybody write about this, except myself. But my idea would be that if this was really a organic demand-fueled rally, in other words, the consumers are actually buying a lot of stuff, which makes the businesses make more. And if they make more, their earnings become better. And if their earnings become better, then the stock market goes up. And they need commodities to make the stuff they make. Even the service companies use commodities or sell their service to companies that use commodities. Why, up until about 6 months ago, have commodities been in the dirt? Last 2 weeks ago in the show, we said that there was, I don't remember the website that said commodities have dropped about an average of minus 8% since 09 to for the next 6 years. So although the rise in markets is indeed remarkable, 6,500 to 26,000 in 8 years, 17,000 and change to 26,000 and change in 1 year, a little bit more, there's no absolute law of markets or economics, that say it can't continue. And by how long, nobody knows. Nobody really knows. As in all things, however, and as the Boy Scouts say, we hope for the best, but we prepare for the worst. That way, no matter what happens, at least you have a chance at not becoming another in a long line of investors that just hoped for the best and did nothing else, right? And as in always, it's thought, and it is true, that if you allocate more money to cash, it will take some of the volatility out of your portfolio because cash doesn't go up or go down. So if you're 80% invested in stocks and you want, you're a little afraid of a correction, you could sell some stocks and put more in cash. I'll take some volatility out. Or if you're convinced that the market will run, you could take the 20% in cash and buy more stocks. So which what you do is based upon what you think and the research you've done or the research that your advisor has done and prepared for. You know, normally as an advisor, if a client is nervous about an up running market, and I had a few clients that actually went to cash when Trump was elected, probably regretting it now, but they said, I don't know what's going to happen. The world's going to come to an end. So I'm going to all cash. You know, that's their opinion. And as an advisor, I have to do what they tell me to do. So I'll give my input. But if they say, hey, I want to go to all cash, I do it because I have to. So as an advisor or as yourself, that you know, you could just go on the visceral feeling that the market's run and I don't want to be more exposed or as exposed, you would allocate more to cash. If you think inflation is around the corner and the market's going to run, you'd allocate less cash because cash doesn't do anything in inflation, right? It protects you in downturns. But in an inflationary environment, when the stock market is a great representation of inflation, it's also a great protection for you in an inflationary environment, you'd want to own stocks. Indeed, if I knew this market was going to crash, with a caveat and a disclaimer, I would say, sell all your stocks and go to cash. That's what I would say. If I knew this market was going to run and run, then I would say no sense holding cash, just be in the stock market. But since we don't know, and I do not know which way this market will go, I have an opinion where it will go, but I refrain from giving that opinion on the air. Regulators kind of frown on that, even if I give a disclaimer. That knowledge is reserved for clients, obviously. But the, you know, I do have an opinion, but I do believe, without a doubt, and I will state, we must hope for the best, but we also must prepare for the worst. And that does it with fiscal management, money management, not fiscal management, monetary management, your own portfolio, knowledge, right? Knowledge is the cornerstone of progress. Knowledge is also the cornerstone of profits and the cornerstone of preventing losses or minimizing losses. So we'll keep an eye on it for you. And we'll see. And for you out there, you want to look at the Dow 26,000, whether it breaches below 26,000. And if it does, then you have to watch the next couple of days or whether it pops back up, because that means it bounced off the resistance level of 26,000. Or if it breaks through 26 and goes into the 25s, it's poked through on the downward side on the resistance level, and the next big resistance level would be 25,000. But there are minor resistance levels all along there that technicians look at through charts and an analysis that say, well, you know, this 25,812 might be a resistance point and so on and so forth. And so, we'll keep an eye on it for you. Keep tuned to Money Matters and we'll stay awake and, hopefully try to help you. So we'll be right back with some more on Money Matters on your community radio station. And let's rock on, Dad.
My toes, lots of candy off my mouth. Maybe I'll even pay.
And welcome back to the 264th edition of Your Economic Forum entitled Money Matters. My name is Mark Cuniverti. Thank you very much for listening and tuning in today while we watch the market so you don't have to. So Dow at 26,093, down 56. Ooh, turning around. Nope, down. Wow, it's hopping around a lot. Down 27 now. So, yeah, I get stopped a lot. And we talked about crypto in the last show, so I didn't know anybody wants to talk about crypto. But, you know, in any time of year, okay, any time, there exists the idea that the holy grail to investing is out there. In other words, can one predict what a particular stock or index will do, what it'll do, and in which direction it would go, and when it would go there? Well, I don't know of a holy grail for predicting. Education is going to help put you on the right path. But there are technical analysts who stare at a chart of a price movement. You know, they'll stare at a movement of a chart and say, you know, over a particular time, and they'll draw their lines, and they'll, from that, they'll draw a conclusion as to future movements. Well, the stock did this in the past by a particular pattern, and they'll do something else in the future. Some tout seasonal tendencies for movements, such as stocks fall in the fall, or energy rises in late fall because of the winter coming, or it's another saying that they'll sell stocks in May and go away and buy them in November. There's a stock market prognostication for presidential cycles, who wins the Super Bowl, and even some based on the length of women's skirts. The various prognostications obviously run the gamut from highly technical to highly ludicrous. Heck, I knew a woman who would shake some wooden cubes in my office, and depending on the symbols that they landed on, that only she understood, and depending on the shake, she would order me to buy or sell a certain security. Talk about leaving your money to chance, huh? That reminds me of another game called gambling. Actually, the Wall Street Journal did gain notoriety for the dartboard test. Okay, dartboard test. It went along lines that a monkey with a box of darts, tossing them at the journal's stock ticker pages, could make more money than most professional money managers. Right, just hurl a bunch of darts, and there you go. The Wall Street Journal has held this contest over 100 times, and they had their employees play the mark, play the monkeys, and throw the darts. The numerical winning average, the pros did lead by a score of 61 to those arbitrarily thrown darts. That information from investorhome.com. The returns and percentages are not as illustrious as the numerical score, so don't go out and hire a group of monkeys or professionals and buy some darts. But the difference between the two groups, the monkeys and the professionals, is embarrassingly smaller than you would think. Around this time of year, two more theories abound. Of course, the Santa Claus rally and the January effect. Santa Claus rally, the bearded fat man in the red suit theory, assumes people in the festive mood of holiday season would buy stocks based on how good they felt during this time of year. The time period for the Santa Claus rally is generally thought to be last week of December to the first two trading days of January of the new year. The January effect, this is based on the idea that portfolio managers have a tendency to sell their losers at the end of the year. They do this to harvest tax losses against gains. Okay? And that in January they buy back selections. So that means more stocks would be sold than usual in the latter part of December, Santa Claus effect put aside, of course, to gain a better tax situation and get rid of their losers so they don't have somebody look at their portfolio in the new year and say, this guy held a bunch of losers. Then in January, when they started buying, all that money would come flooding back into the markets. Now, they always say, as January goes, first 2 weeks of January or week of January, so go the markets. That's not always held true, obviously. None of these things have really always held true. Needless to say, if any of these were foolproof, the word would be out and the House would rig the game against such methods. But we see no such rules set by the stock market authorities forbidding investors from participating in any of these theories. Will they bet their hard-earned savings based on such silliness? Maybe, maybe not. And the fact that these theories are still believed and disbelieved tells us none of these theories are foolproof. Sure, some statistics might lean one way or another to these theories, as statistics are rarely in perfect balance, but the bottom line is none of these methods or systems, man-made or computer-generated, can predict the ups and downs of the market, although there are charlatans out there that would try and convince you otherwise and sell you a program or a book on how you can beat the market. There are better advisors and worse advisors, obviously, right? There are some pros that are really, really good. And there are some advisors that are not so good. The reason why none of these theories works, in my opinion, perfectly, is why a degree in economics is a Bachelor of Arts and not a Bachelor of Sciences degree. It's because the stock markets are said to be a study of human sociology and not a study of science, right? Science, like math, has definite truths, absolute cause and effects, and irrefutable conclusions given a certain set of circumstances. Boil water at sea level at 212 in an open container, and it will indeed boil at 212. That's an unrefutable, provable fact every time. The movement of markets, however, is, as I have said, just the sum of all the beliefs of all the millions of investors in it at any given time. And therefore, if the markets move according to what people believe, that is sociology, my friend, not science. You tell me what hundreds of millions of investors will do at any given day in the market as a whole, and the stock market will be our oyster. But then again, that's not quite possible, is it? You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll be right back. We're in the money. We're in the money. We've got a lot of what it takes to get along. We're in the money. The skies are sunny. Old Man Depression, you are through. You've done us wrong. We never see an headline, but a red line today. And when we see the landlord, we can look that guy right in the eye. We're in the money. Come on. You're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station. We're in the money. Well, I guess a lot of people with this market going up. Yeah. So 2017, we'll look back on 2017 one more time, just so we know what kind of year 2017. And the Dow reached new high 69 times in 2017. Indeed, looking back, the chart of various stock markets looked like the trajectory of a ballistic missile. Common contrarian assets like fixed income, preferred stocks and bonds, have languished in the face of this relentless, unrelenting rally. And some says this is in keeping with how markets move. Fixed income sometimes tends to move in opposite directions. When investors are giddy with the stock market, they sell off their stupid bonds and they buy stocks because they can make more. Chinese stocks had the most stocks numerically considered as best performers. The Fear Index, Volatility Index, the VIX symbol, plummeted to new lows in a chart that looks much like the Dow, but in the opposite direction, which means straight down. Global corporations issued more bonds that emphasized green investments, so the planet let out a sigh of relief in 2017. That was good. European corporations issued a record 96 billion in euros in junk debt, also known as high yield debt, junk bonds. This was attributed to low interest rates and a favorable business climate. In other words, if interest rates are low, you don't have to pay as much interest to borrow money, so those that needed money, they borrowed it, and people loaned it. Global corporate bonds, debt, outpaced them all with $2.5 trillion issued in 2017. So not only are the governments adding money in debt, global corporate bonds, $2.5 trillion, was borrowed and coughed up by investors who bought those bonds. Unemployment eased to 15 years low in U.S., Japan, Hong Kong, Israel, the U.K., and Portugal. And according to Trump, African-American Mexican-American unemployment, minority employment, if I have the quote right, reached historical lows. Bitcoin went crazy. Its market cap, how much money flowed into Bitcoin, outpaced all but 12 companies in the S&P 500. More money flew into Bitcoin than all the companies in the S&P 500, with the exception of 12 of them. 1752% gain, 1752% gain in value went into digital assets, $277 billion. Other 2017 notables include the largest equity buyout by Apollo Global Management. They ponied up $24.6 billion in funds. And the residential property in Hong Kong continued to hold the valuation record as the most expensive real estate on the planet. 17 Atlantic storms are big enough to be given names, and they have reported to cause the largest insurance losses on record. U.S. student loan market exceeded the total amount of the high-yield junk corporate market, which means that a heck of a lot of money is owned by college grads and attendees of college and even some dropouts. Some say this could be another crisis in the making, along with a subprime auto debt, and I concur. Also, 2017 witnessed a world of excesses in the art world. Leonardo da Vinci's Salvatore Mundi, if I pronounce that right, fetched the highest price ever paid for a painting, $450 million. That's a half a billion. All in all, of course, there have been worse years in the market, right? I don't think anybody's complaining that this is a terrible year, 2017. 2017 doesn't hold all the records, but this year certainly has been exciting for investors and companies alike, for sure. So, yeah. And then last week, we did cover Bitcoin in kind of a different spin. Gold has many functions, both industrial and monetarily. And in the industry, gold has unique properties, which is extreme corrosion resistance, buried in the sea for 10,000 years or in the dirt, and you can brush it off and it looks great. It's durable. It's malleable. You can stretch it. It's conductive, and it's beautiful. It's a good electronic component, has medicinal qualities, used in jewelry, of course, and some even claim it has magical qualities. As a monetary alternative, it has had few equals in history. Many paper currencies were backed by gold, based on gold, or tied to gold in some way or another. Even mighty governments, including ours, stockpile the metal for monetary reasons. You have to wonder, though, with the advent of the digital currencies, which I call the cryptos, right? The cryptos. Some money obviously must have come out of gold and gone into cryptos. Many investors perceive gold as the only real money, and it is that a gold coin in your hand is the ultimate in isolation from currency printing governments, right? Gold is bought in times of fear, both economically and otherwise, and it has been considered a viable diversification in many portfolios. And in my opinion, it is a viable alternative. My opinion. Gold pays no interest, but either does a dollar bill in your hand. Gold is no one's promise to pay as a paper currency. Gold is recognizable worldwide and could said be the only thing enemies will trade with each other when fighting with each other. Gold cannot be printed at will by government, so it is immune from monetary inflation, which is inflation caused by printing. Think Mexican peso. Gold basically has filled the need for those who distrust governments and monetary authorities who can print up dollars at will and possibly destroy or at least erode the purchasing power of those holding such paper currencies. Not to say gold doesn't have its risks. All investments bear some risks, right? Whether they be from organic supply demand, the risk of government interference, interest rate or general market risk, to name a few. Gold has swung wildly in price over the course of history. Sometimes it's stable, sometimes it's not. And the U.S. government, among others, has made its possession illegal in the past. But over centuries, gold's unique qualities are thought by some to be the panacea, the answer to wealth preservation over the centuries. And they believe there is no substitute until the crypto arrived. Crypto, cyber dollars, Ethereum, whatever they call them, has become a viable alternative to some. Some, myself, have begun to question whether gold will be superseded by the idea of a cloud-based wealth vehicle. Indeed, the market for cryptos, my name for them, have challenged gold in sheer size and popularity, and more people own cryptos just as much as people own gold, almost. More people I know own cyber dollars personally in one form or another than own gold. I've been approached by so many people in the last 6 months about cryptos. Certainly, the interest in cryptos has exploded, and one could say into a mania-like frenzy. Indeed, the chart for certain cryptos like Bitcoin has an eerie resemblance to other boom-bust trading patterns in the past. Just look at a price chart. The idea of the crypto is that no one government can control them. The mathematical algorithms that make up the crypto creation, some call it mining, crypto mining, exists on millions of computers everywhere, therefore it can't be wiped out. This also means trading is virtually unstoppable, but governments can and have put a stop to anything that threatens their ability to control economic structures. In other words, they could just shut down all the sites, right? That is not to say or to say that a crypto is a safe store of value. This is a critical quality of any monetary instrument of exchange. Does it remain stable? Does it maintain your purchasing power over time? Only one has to look at the price chart of the various cryptos to see their prices at least recently are anything but stable. But the perception of a cyber dollar floating around that people think that can't be shot down by governments has proved enough of a catalyst, at least in recent months, to garner millions of investors to trade in billions of dollars of all sorts of different currencies for a version of a crypto. No doubt massive profits have also contributed to their popularity. But that belief, I'm going to buy it because it goes up in price, that has proved dangerous, if not fatal, to many investors who bought something because it was skyrocketing in price. The idea remains, however, that cryptos may hold similar characteristics to gold in many investors' mind. The government conspiracy groups are an obvious customer of the crypto, as well as techies. Techies have finally found something they can invest in. Right? Right up their alley. I think cryptos could steal some gold dollars away from the gold market. I think it has. But how many dollars are going into cryptos instead of gold remains to be seen. In its truest form, cryptos do offer an interesting alternative to the people, to the reasons that people hold gold. I will remain by saying it is interesting. And we'll be right back to say adieu. And you are tuned to your community radio station. My name is Mark Cuniberti. You have been listening to the 264th edition of Money Matters, your economic show on your community radio station. We must close the show by saying discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this station of staff members or underwriters, and should not by any means be taken as personal investment advice. Consult a professional and do your own research before investing. And that's it. It's been a pleasure serving you today, serving you up some money. Our website is moneymanagementradio.com. It is a free, totally no-pay website. Past shows are there, as well as newsletters. You can sign up for the newsletter. Our way, your community station's way of saying thank you for listening. My name's Mark. Go make some money. It's a hit. Don't give